You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In November 1959, photojournalist Robert McCabe embarked on an expedition to Antarctica, and now a collection of those images is being published by international photography publishers under the title Deep Freeze. On top of that, from now through January 14th, a 70-year selection of his work from 1940 to 2010, which includes some of the Antarctic photos, will be exhibited at James Cummins Bookseller on Madison Avenue. I'm very pleased that they bring Robert McCabe to our show today. Hi.
Hello, Leonard.
Now, 70 years, that means you started taking pictures when you were 5 years old?
When I was 5 years old, my dad was a publisher of the Daily Mirror, which was, as you probably recall, was a picture newspaper competing with the news. So when I was 5 years old, I was given my first camera, a baby brownie made of Bakelite.
And some of those pictures actually are worth exhibiting today?
Well, There was only actually one of those pictures that I was able to find. There was a violent hurricane in the early 40s that washed tugboats and barges up on the beach in Playland. And we lived in Rye, not far from Playland. And I wandered down there and took some photographs.
It's been over 50 years since you made your trip to Antarctica. Were those images published at the time?
They were published in a story in the Sunday Mirror magazine with a few color photographs and a story that I wrote. But that was the only publication. And I had intended to do a book for a long time. And all I can say is once in a while it pays to procrastinate, because it turned out that waiting 50 years led to coincidence with the 100th anniversary of Scott and Amundsen's visit to the South Pole.
Well, these images are really quite striking. Were people as interested in them at the time as they might be today when we think a lot about what's going on in Antarctica?
Well, I think that the Antarctic was very much terra incognita at that time. Again, in the early part of the century, it got a lot of publicity when Amundsen and Scott reached the pole. But then between 1911 and 1956, no one visited the South Pole. And it was only in 1956 that an American aircraft landed there and a U.S. base was set up. So it was with Operation Deep Freeze that began in the mid-50s that interest in the scientific aspects of Antarctica really increased quite dramatically.
And Antarctica is the only place that we know mostly from photographs.
Yeah, the continent has not – it's been explored, and there have been people who have walked across the continent, but it's basically aerial reconnaissance has revealed the polar area. And the weather – some of the year the winds are 140 miles an hour and the temperature well below human life surviving conditions. But the polar plateau is in the dark for half the year, as you know. So it's a very uninviting place. And to the best of my knowledge, there's only been one aerial flight into the South Pole in midwinter to rescue a lady who was ill.
Did you go to the South Pole or did you just...
We flew over the South Pole. We were on a cargo drop. We left Ross Island, McMurdo Sound, took off from the ice runway there in a Globemaster with a full cargo of supplies for the South Pole station. And we flew to the pole, circled, dropped our cargo and came back.
How do people deal with having daylight all hours and then having no daylight at all hours?
Well, I'll tell
you. Is there a seasonal affective disorder a problem?
They every 8 hours they serve meals, and you lose track of which meal it is. from a photographer's point of view, if you ever go to bed, you feel very guilty because there it is, beautiful cross lighting of the snow and of buildings and of the natural life. So whenever I went to bed, I felt terrible that I was stopping my photography.
Many of the photographs are not the sort of thing that we'd be likely to see today, like the ones of people hugging penguins or petting seals. Was there a more nonchalant attitude towards interacting with the animals at the time?
There very definitely was, because just a few, literally days after I arrived back from the Antarctic trip, the Antarctic Treaty was signed, and one is no longer allowed to hug penguins. Nor go close to seals. You're supposed to stand absolutely still when a penguin approaches.
Although penguins, you describe a penguin making its way into the bedroom of a Navy officer. So the
That's correct.
Penguins may have wanted to be hugged.
Well, I think maybe they did. This particular penguin was all by himself, and we had him in the bar, on a bar, and when we put him outside, he really didn't want to leave. And the photograph on the cover of my book is of the penguin finally walking back to the sea by himself after this visit to the U.S. base.
Looks very sad. You also write about the practice of killing seals with a shotgun to feed the huskies. That sort of thing seems inconceivable now.
That is definitely off limits today.
Did people even think twice about it at the time?
At the time, no, and that, of course, had been an Antarctic tradition. And, of course, in the very early days of exploration, seals and penguins were human food as well on the early expeditions.
Were people already predicting that the ice caps would be melting 50 years ago?
No, it really wasn't. It wasn't an issue, to the best of my recollection. Today, of course, you have giant calving of glaciers, and you've had ice floes the size of Connecticut break loose in the Antarctic. But while the periphery of the continent seems to be showing signs of melting, the ice at the South Pole is still building up. And very few people could answer this casual question, how deep is the ice at the South Pole, but it's almost a mile and a half deep, and it's still increasing. And the base that I saw from the Globemaster when we dropped the cargo is today buried.
Have you been back?
I have not been back.
Are any of the structures that you photographed, like Scott's Discovery Hut or Shackleton's Kitchen, still there?
Yes, those are still there, and very fortunately, there is a group that, including Alexandra Shackleton, the granddaughter of the explorer, and others in New Zealand who have launched an effort to preserve these huts. They're very important archaeological monuments. They're very beautiful, and because of the low temperatures year-round, they have been preserved. And they're actually Alexandra Shackleton's organization collects money for the support of the maintenance of these archaeological monuments.
My guest is Robert A. McCabe, whose book, Deep Freeze, A Photographer's Antarctic Odyssey in the Year 1959, is published by the IPP, the International Photography Publishers. It has a little sticker on it that says 100 years, South Pole Amundsen Centennial, Scott, or I guess it's Scott Amundsen South Pole Centennial. But this is... These are images from 50 years ago, and you were just 24 years old at the time.
Exactly.
Most people would be going to Europe or Asia at that age. And you were traveling with a group of people. Were they journalists like you?
There were half a dozen journalists, from the Chicago American, one from the Hartford Current, a television news reporter from KBIG in Los Angeles, and also a reporter from the Washington Times, I believe it was. But the majority of the group were Navy League people and scientists who were on the trip.
But it was rare for people to be there at that time. Now we have cruise ships going down there. Is that something you think is a good idea?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that they disturb the environment at all. I think it's a wonderful experience for people. Actually, I tried to persuade my wife to take one of the cruise ships down there a few years ago, and she found reasons not to want to go to a cold climate, and it turned out that the vessel that we intended to go on sank. There was no loss of life, but it hit an iceberg and sank. And fortunately, there were other cruise ships in the area, and they picked up all the passengers. So she had good instincts.
You write that there was a notable difference between the outlook of the men who were visiting for only a short amount of time and those who were there for longer stays.
Right.
And well, it was all men in those days?
It was all men. There wasn't a woman in sight. And, of course, today there are a lot of women, scientists or women there, but it was only men. And all of the visitors were men as well.
But there's a difference in just their styles or the fact that the ones who were staying there knew that they were going to be there for months on end?
No, the people who signed up for wintering over, they obviously had a depth of affection, and they were part of the environment, whereas the people who were there just to bring in supplies or work in the summertime, they just couldn't wait to get back to Christchurch, New Zealand, and civilization.
You describe life in Antarctica as a life of extremes. You write that even the beer was either always warm or frozen.
Right.
There was no way to keep it at nice refrigerated temperatures.
This was very funny because if you left the beer inside, of course, it was warm. If you put it outside, it was it froze. So they would leave it in the vestibule of the Quonset huts, but it was still cold out there. And most of the time it froze, and people would enjoy the alcohol and throw away the rest often.
The alcohol separated itself from the rest of the beer.
Right.
You write that you were amazed at how much remains to be done and how little is really known about the continent and its mysteries. Only 10% of the Antarctic continent has been adequately mapped still?
Well, I think today it's way, way beyond that. I think many of the places that I photographed had no name in 1959. Today, as far as I can see, they're all named. I had some extraordinary help in identifying places in the photographs from folks at the National Science Foundation, and I sent them one photograph that's in the book. And they had names for every mountain peak. They had names for the glacier. They had names for a little island in the glacier. So I think today the naming problem is not an issue.
And today, since the Antarctic Treaty, Antarctica is a scientific preserve, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. Nobody can claim it?
As far as I know, they're people still have not totally abandoned their claims, but it's an international area. It's supposed to be a zone where no one goes in and stakes mining claims or brings weapons, and let's hope that it stays that way.
We have a slideshow of images from your exhibit on our show page at WNYC.org, and as I said, some of the pictures are from your trip to Antarctica. But a lot are of Greece. That's a far cry from Antarctica, isn't it?
It is. It's a very different climate. And my brother had a Greek friend at college who invited him to come for a week in 1954 to Greece. And my brother invited me to accompany him. I did. And basically, I've spent spent the remainder of my life in very, very closely linked to Greece. My wife is Greece. I photographed Greece very extensively in the early years. In 1957, the National Geographic asked me to take some photographs for them there. So my photographs of Greece outnumber probably 10 to 1 any place else in the world that I've photographed.
Well, you keep on going back to Greece, but you don't go back to Antarctica, obviously. Do you have any new projects that you're working on?
My next book, which is being published by Abbeville Press, your neighbor here on Varick Street, two blocks down, is called The Ramble in Central Park, A Wilderness West of Fifth. And it's photographs of the 38 acres between 73rd and 79th Street in the center of Central Park that's been, since the park was originally designed, left in the wild. It's a very, very beautiful area, and it's extraordinarily photogenic, particularly in the fall and spring and winter time. So that's the next book, and that will be printed in January and distributed. It's in the spring catalog of Abbeville.
And Antarctica, of course, is very photogenic, and we have this new book called Deep Freeze from International Photography Publishers. We had lots of images from Mr. McCabe's trip there in November 1959. And, of course, Greece is always wonderful to photograph. And there are a lot of pictures of Greece in the exhibit that is at the James Cummins Bookseller on Madison Avenue now through January 14th. You can see selections from all of them on our website at WNYC.org. And I want to thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you very much. The Cummins exhibition actually opens officially tomorrow at 5:30.
Don't go today. Wait until tomorrow.
Right. Thank you, Leonard.